basically every day I pick the thing up, and it's changed drastically. And I've been very, very critical of the paper over the past several years in regards to the quality of the reporting that they've been putting out. They changed. News Corp bought the Wall Street Journal, and most certainly they have improved with their pictures. A lot more pictures, a lot more stories on travel and luxury real estate than other destinations and wine and things like that. But as far as their business reporting is concerned, it's gone straight downhill. It is, you want to call it, people like to call it a conservative publication. I like to call it the publication for the conservative side of the establishment. What we often like to equate in terms of Caddyshack as the Bushwood Republicans. We give credit where credit's due when people put out good articles. We are an equal opportunity basher here on the program. And I got to come after the Wall Street Journal editorial board. They put out a editorial piece, and it was satire. It was a satire of the search that's been ongoing for Wells Fargo and how Wells Fargo is trying to find a CEO. And they write, wanted for top post in West Coast financial industry, a savvy manager who understands contemporary politics. Prior job holder resigned in March after failing to appreciate the bank's new status as a public utility. Company currently operates under the supervision of the Federal Reserve and Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, and the right candidate must be eager to follow their orders. Government consent decree prohibits growth until regulators are satisfied that corporate culture has changed. The winning candidate will never have been overheard using the phrase return on equity. Hardy har har har. Listen, okay, I'm reading this and I'm saying to myself, I'm laughing. I am. I got a sinking suspicion that people at the Wall Street editorial board understand how the world works.
Well, good afternoon on this not sunny Friday, March 6th. Can't believe we're into March, but I guess we can be happy that it is not below zero, because this afternoon there's an 80% chance of rain. Obviously, if we're north of here, it's going to be snow. Tonight, there is a chance of snow, rain, snow, mixed with snow, likely. Then there's a chance, again, of rain or snow or a mixture, depending on where you're living, because tonight it's expected to go down to about 33 degrees. So it certainly looked like snow out there today this morning, but it wasn't cold enough. Tomorrow it should become sunny, high of about 46 degrees, and then tomorrow night, Saturday night, mostly clear, low of about 26 degrees. And then on Sunday, Sunday looks like it's going to be a beautiful day, sunny, high of about 58 degrees. And then again on Monday, high could be in the 60s, mid-60s, and again, mostly sunny. So good and bad news, because frankly, we have not had cold weather, and it's not been cold enough. I think we're going to find we're not going to be happy, all the early allergies, everything that's coming out, because we haven't had some deep frosts, and certainly haven't had snow. And tonight is a possibly an exception, but maybe not, although there's a 70% chance of rain, snow tonight, then it is probably going to be rain in most locations. And if it is a sleet and snow mixture, that's not fun. But it's not going to stay cold enough long enough. I don't know about you folks, but my daffodils are coming up. And again, the flowers need more time. And if we get a real cold spell, it's going to be a difficult problem. In any event, that's what's happening on the in the weather. I am Pat Smits. I'm your host. It's the Law, and going to talk about a variety of things today. But before I do, let me see if we can say thanks to some of our sponsors, including, of course, the Chamber.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Thanks, Chris, and let's... get to some news, I guess. Well, legal information. And one of the things that I enjoy is there's an accountant, Kel Barson, and he actually always puts out some really information that's helpful, helpful to attorneys, but helpful to everyone. And so when possible, I try to pass on this information. And I thought something came in from Cal today that I would like to share with everyone. And by the way, I think he also has a little joke. And his joke today, or his witticism, is this is from one of the senators. And he said, this is the senator, quote, "I think video games is a bigger problem than guns because video games affect people." This was a quote from Senator Lamar Alexander, one of the Republican senators from Tennessee. And I'm about to go to Nashville in a couple weeks. Unbelievable. But in any event, just so you know, that that's the reason why video games is a bigger problem, according to the senator. However, what I'd like to share with you today is something about paying taxes. As you may know, several years ago, various taxing authorities started accepting the payment of income taxes via credit cards. Great, right? Well, not so great. And this is currently being done by the IRS and the state of New Jersey. So this is just two examples, but an example that, you know, near and dear to our hearts, because the question, of course, that comes up or should come up is the effect of, you know, should I pay my taxes via my credit card, with my credit card? Guess what? I can just pay it by credit card. Well, wait a minute. There are two reasons why this is appealing to people. One, it postpones the actual laying out of funds for at least a month or more. And, of course, you know, you can pay it off over time. And then the other reason, for those of us who look and have credit cards that have points, it generates points. So, therefore, why not? Well, as Cal explains, there are very good reasons why not. And, frankly, it almost never makes economic sense. And the reason is that first, since the government is not in the business of paying credit card fees, it will typically cost the person who charges an extra 2-3% to make a tax payment with a credit card. Thus, unless you're getting at least 2-3% back, meaning 2x or 3x points or some equivalent, you are immediately losing. So then, even then, at best, you're simply breaking even, because, you know, I don't know of anyone that will give you 4 points. So the only advantage remaining is that you buy 1 month to make the actual payment. Now, of course, if you put it on a credit card, you might spread it out. But then, you know, if it's 1 month, unless your investment approach is rather unusual, a 1 month extension before you have to pay is worth virtually nothing. Now, on the other hand, of course, the concern is if you use that credit card and as an opportunity to stretch out payments over a period of time by running a balance on your credit card, then you are paying anywhere from several percentage points to 20 or even 30% interest on this money. And you're paying that to your credit card company for the privilege of paying your taxes by credit card. It's not a good deal. Do not do it. As you know, credit card interest is not deductible any longer. It was at one point, but no longer is it deductible. So it makes no sense to do this. And, you know, actually it makes no sense to have a credit card and a running balance when you have such high interest rates. Now, you know, I think everyone should have a credit card. Obviously, the credit card companies don't like the folks who pay it off every month, but that is really the way we should do it. I'm frankly surprised how many of my clients have high credit card debt when, you know, they really don't need it. In other words, they have more than sufficient money to pay that credit card every single month. And so it's an easy way to spend a lot of extra money on the interest charges. So I think everyone should take a look at that. But certainly if it's looks like it's something you should do to pay your taxes, remember, this could be another 20%. Now, I'm not saying don't pay the taxes, and it may be the only way someone can. But then I think talk to your accountant and see what the cost, the interest cost, if you don't pay everything up front on April 15th. Take a look at what it would be, because in some cases it's going to be less costly to pay the interest that you owe to the government rather than on the credit card. So my advice is always take a look at what your taxes are going to be. If you're going to owe any money, absolutely file the tax return on time. We're coming up to April, and that's tax season. Well, it's tax season now for all the accountants I know, but taxes are due April 15th. However, you can automatically get an extension and get an extension until October 15th. It may be 17 this year, but in any event, you can get that 6 months extension. However, unless you pay all the taxes that are due by April 15th, you're going to be charged interest, and I'm not sure what the penalties, how that works now. There may have been some changes, but you definitely want to file. Even if you can't pay the taxes, you file the taxes on time, and then you start paying or sending payments into the government. But don't get tricked into thinking that maybe the best way to do it is with a credit card. And in fact, as I said, and will continue to say, you know, pay off those credit cards and, you know, just make a habit of, you know, seeing what they are, trying to figure out why you're charging to the point that you can't pay it off on a monthly basis, and try to do so. I think credit cards are a good way to establish credit and certainly easy way to keep track of your expenditures, which, you know, for most of us, otherwise it's hard to do. And I am one of these people who love to get the points. In fact, I recently took a trip where I had enough points that I was able to fly for free. And so that is something that, you know, everybody has to look at their own tolerance for debt. But it's totally out of control for many, many families where it shouldn't be. Sometimes it's inevitable, but if it's not, hey, figure out a way to try to, if not pay off the credit card every month, pay more, substantially more than you're charging, so that you can get it paid off over a period of time. So we'll be back after play a couple more spots from our sponsors and talk about some of the other things in the news this week. Legal news.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Okay, back with some of the legal news. I have a case. This was not a published case, but it shows in some extent how long people don't have to pay their mortgage before it's actually a foreclosure. But this was U.S. Bank versus someone by the name of Brennan, and it's an appellate division case, and the defendant, Brennan, appealed the final judgment of foreclosure, and the defendant entered a residential mortgage in 2006 and did not dispute the fact that he had been in default since September 2016. So remember, this is now 2020. So the note was assigned to the plaintiff, U.S. Bank, and U.S. Bank filed a foreclosure action and presented a certification attesting its right to foreclose. Now, the defendant in that case argued that the certification was inadequate and an affidavit was required. Now, the trial judge rejected the defendant's argument and denied the defendant's motion to vacate. And now what happened, of course, is the bank obtained a final judgment of foreclosure and the property was sold at a sheriff's sale. The trial court denied the defendant's motion to vacate the sale and the defendant Brennan appealed. So what this is there was a final judgment of foreclosure and the property was sold at sheriff's sale, which is what happens. And then defendant wanted to vacate the sale, and when that was denied, the defendant, Brennan, appealed. And he argued that a notice to the bar, meaning New Jersey attorneys, dated April 30th, 2019, directed for the first time that a certification could be used in lieu of an affidavit in residential mortgage cases. Now, let me explain the difference, because actually, in both an affidavit and a certification, basically is certifying that all of the information provided is true. When I first started practicing law a zillion years ago, we tended to use affidavits more often. But certainly now, unless it's required by a rule or by a statute, most of the time we file certifications. And that would be the person, I so-and-so, you know, and it's a full age, certify as follows, and then there's a list of the certification. And then there's a paragraph indicating that all of the information is true to the best of the person's knowledge, and if anything is willfully false, they're subject to punishment. So in most cases, I think most attorneys, you know, would be surprised if an affidavit, in fact, is required. And, of course, since the bank in this case presented a certification attesting its right to foreclose. So they laid out all of the reasons why they could foreclose. So, as I said, the trial court denied the motion to vacate the sale, and then there was the appeal. So the appeal basically was on a technical basis because the notice in April of last year directed for the first time that a certification could be used in lieu of an affidavit in residential mortgage cases. However, the appellate court disagreed with the defendant's interpretation of the significance of the notice to the bar and found that the notice merely confirmed a long-established principle under one of the court rules and that the defendant did not show that the plaintiff's supporting certifications were insufficient to establish standing. And, in fact, the certification showed that the plaintiff had possession of the note and the validity of the assignment. So the fact that there was a notice sent out to the bar to remind attorneys that they could file certifications rather than affidavits did not give this defendant the rights to open up the case and open up the sale. So we'll be back in just a minute. I want to play a couple more items and see if I can clear up my voice.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
And even though this case is not published and isn't precedent, I think that although people who are desperate may try any possible way, this would be a case that I can't imagine any attorney would have given this defendant any hope that simply because it was a certification rather than an affidavit, there was a chance of getting this case, especially after not only the foreclosure but the sheriff's sale. So in any event, I have another a case that has to do with employment benefits, and this was a plaintiff, and he filed against the Board of Trustees, Police and Firemen Retirement System. Again, an appellate division. This was not published, but it's still, I think it's interesting and interesting because people need to be very careful with respect to what they do if they're working. Now, this was police and firemen's retirement system. And with any governmental retirement. So what happened here is the plaintiff appealed from the retirement system, the final agency decision. And the final agency decision adopted the administrative law judge's determination to affirm the decision to invoke a three-year forfeiture of plaintiff's retirement benefit. So in this case, the plaintiff was part of that retirement system, and he was a correction officer who suffered three work-related injuries during his career, including a hand injury that put him out of work in 2012. And at the end of 2012, he was involved in a motor vehicle accident after consuming alcohol and prescription medication. And he was convicted of a DWI. Now, the record of his DWI offense reflected that plaintiff tried to drive off during the traffic stop and also threatened arresting officers at the police station. So his employment was later terminated for conduct unbecoming a public employee for his misuse of his office to avoid arrest and for threatening a police officer. Very important, and they're really looking into these things. And, you know, I guess I want to say in the old days, not at all unusual for someone to actually try to avoid arrest and use their governmental position to do it. But in this case, not only did he threaten the arresting officers, he tried to drive off during the traffic stop. So where lots of times things were kind of looked, you know, maybe they turned their head, not on something like this. So the plaintiff appealed his termination, and while he was doing that, a physician concluded that he was permanently and totally disabled during his employment due to his three work-related injuries. And the board concluded that the plaintiff had left employment due to a disciplinary termination, not due to disability. So this was the issue. Was it disciplinary termination or disability? And the board denied his request for disability retirement since he could never return to work if his disability dissipated. Interesting argument. So somebody who is retired on disability, if they are no longer disabled, they're expected to go back to work. So the board further forfeited the final 3 years of pension of the plaintiff's service and salary credit. So they said he had to forfeit that final 3 years based on his dishonorable service connected with his DWI. And the administrative law judge ultimately affirmed the forfeiture of retirement credits. On appeal, the plaintiff contended that forfeiture was unduly harsh because his dishonorable conduct occurred after he had become disabled and violated the excessive fines clause of the Eighth Amendment. The court rejected his arguments and affirmed, noting that the plaintiff was terminated prior to his application for disability benefits and therefore was ineligible for such benefits. So, real concern for people working for the state, and that's where I'm seeing most of these cases where there's a forfeiture. And they, in this case, it was a 3-year forfeiture of his retirement benefit. So it wasn't the entire retirement benefit. Okay, back after another minute. I'm clearing my voice again. Stay tuned.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Okay. I'm just trying to see if there's some this might be of interest to some people. It was a public records case, and Bozzi versus the Borough of Roselle Park, and the plaintiff in this case appealed from the denial of his OPRA request seeking the names and addresses on dog license records issued by the municipality. And open records, in other words, there's statute about the necessity to open public records. But after there was more than one municipality, and so after the municipality separately denied plaintiff's requests, he filed a complaint under OPRA and the common law right of access to public records. So the statutory right and the common law right. The trial court dismissed his complaint, ruling that he was not entitled to the records where his sole purpose for seeking the information was to solicit dog owners to sell invisible fencing systems at their homes. The trial court held that licenses did not furnish their contact information as required by law, with the expectation that it would be given to someone who would then solicit the people for goods and services. The trial court concluded that the release of this information might, and this is a quote, encourage people not to comply with the law, end quote, meaning that they wouldn't license their dogs. So on appeal, the plaintiff argued that the names and addresses on the dog licenses were available to him under OPRA, and that the common law, as well as the common law, because they were public records in which the licensees had no or insufficient expectation of privacy with respect to the information. So the appellate court agreed with the plaintiff's argument and reversed the trial court's dismissal of the plaintiff's complaint. The appellate court noted that the personal information on dog licenses was not among the categories of information that were expressly exempt from disclosure under OPRA. And the court further noted that OPRA offered no overreaching exemption for the disclosure of names or home addresses in public records. The court noted that the courts generally do not inquire into the reason behind OPRA requests, such as a person seeking the public records, why. And a person seeking public records for commercial purposes has as much right to access the records as anyone else. I don't want to say it was a change, but certainly really opens up the kinds of records that might be searched by someone who has a, the motive to sell any kind of product or get the names and addresses for some solicitation, maybe some pet, maybe you know, training to train dogs to train, I don't think you can train cats, but in any event, the fact that it's a commercial purpose, and that's the really issue here. Was this a commercial? And yes, it was a commercial purpose. And does that change the law? And here the court said no. And it said a person seeking public records for commercial purposes has as much right to access the records as anyone else would. And the court held that the plaintiff's request did not invade, and this is, quote, an objectively reasonable expectation of privacy, noting that dog owners frequently walk their dogs in public and therefore do not seek to conceal their very interesting, sorry about that, I was just reading it to myself, conceal their status as dog owners. So actually, that case was a public records case, Bozzi versus Bureau of Roselle Park, and that was approved for publication. So that could be used by someone else who, for example, wants to come to the Borough of Flemington and get information that, you know, without going around to all of the people that they'd have to get permission from. So, interesting case for certainly people who want to get a hold of public records, and this certainly defines the fact that this type of record is no longer, well, I shouldn't say no longer, is not exempt. People can get them. There was another appeal, kind of interesting from the standpoint of it takes so long to file an appeal, you know, so you would think. But let me tell you about the case. It was approved for publication, and it's State versus Bellamy. And this was so this was, again, the appellate division. And I don't know why. So this was published. I'm not sure why it was published just recently. But in any event, in this case, Bellamy appealed from his amended judgment of conviction, awarding him, that's a strange term, but anyway, awarding him 86 days of jail credits on his aggregate 10-year sentence for aggravated manslaughter and unlawful possession of a weapon. So, in this case, he was on parole for a sentence for first-degree robbery, and he shot and killed, during that time, he shot and killed someone by the name of Brown. And the defendant was subsequently arrested for parole violation unrelated to the homicide. So he comes out of prison. He's on parole. And then he's subsequently arrested for a violation or violations of his parole. And these violations were unrelated to the manslaughter. So what happened is he was later arrested for the homicide. I'm sorry, this sounds a little convoluted because it is. So his parole was revoked with a 12-month period of parole ineligibility. And so he was later indicted for first-degree murder, burglary, robbery, and related offenses. And the parole board later denied defendant's parole, citing a 23-month period of parole ineligibility. Wow, I don't know why I'm tripping over those words today. So the defendant completed his parole supervision on his original robbery sentence. And so this goes on and on. I'm not so sure it's as thought-provoking as I thought it was at first, or of that much interest. It would be of interest to certainly, prosecutors, defense attorneys, criminal defense attorneys, etc. Okay, I'm going to take a short break and see if I can honestly come up with something else. I was looking and didn't find a lot today that I thought might be of interest. So let me take one quick break, and then I will come back and see what we can find and talk about.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Okay, back again. There just seem to be a lot of cases, not published, but a lot of cases dealing with foreclosure. Here's a case, again, not approved for publication, but decided this week, Wells Fargo Bank versus Gunter King, Appellate Division again. And in this case, the defendants appealed from the denial of their motion to vacate final judgment. Defendants executed a note and mortgage in connection with a predecessor to Wells Fargo. I mean, one of the things we have to realize is that a lot of these mortgages get transferred, and it's not unusual for mortgage to see 4 or 5 different lending institutions or servicers that, handle these motions if the home has been occupied for any length of time. So in this case, Wells Fargo took over that mortgage and note, and that the defendants had signed the note, and the mortgage was with a prior bank or mortgagee. So when the defendants defaulted, the Wells Fargo filed a foreclosure complaint. And then one of the defendants filed an answer contesting, among other things, plaintiff Wells Fargo's standing. And this is a pretty customary thing to do. Tough to win. So while so one defendant, interesting. I perk up my ears because it sounds like this was a matrimonial. These were husband and wife, or this was husband and wife, who just didn't agree, and so they both filed different reasons for the default to be vacated. So the other defendant moved to vacate the default, where the first one said that they were contesting and filed an answer, contesting a number of things, in fact, including the standing of the plaintiff, meaning standing is whether or not they had the right to bring the lawsuit. Now, the other defendant moved to vacate the default, and then the bank moved for summary judgment, meaning, hey, judge, there's no legitimate argument here. We're entitled to this by law. They don't have anything to stand on as far as the defense. So the defendants ultimately entered a consent order in which the parties withdrew their motions, and the matter was referred for entry of final judgment as an uncontested matter, with plaintiff agreeing not to apply to the court for final judgment before June 1st, 2016, and to waive any deficiency amount. So defendants filed multiple bankruptcy petitions, which resulted in a stay of the sheriff's sale of defendant's property. Defendant unilaterally moved to vacate the default judgment. If I didn't say ultimately moved, I meant ultimately moved. And so they ultimately moved to vacate the default judgment, alleging lack of jurisdiction, lack of standing, and fraud upon the court. They alleged that the plaintiff had fraudulently induced them, so this is their argument, induced them to enter into a predatory loan and consent order. At oral argument, defendant's attorney claimed that their prior firm failed to adequately advise defendants before they entered into the consent order. And the trial court denied the motion, ruling that the record did not support the finding that plaintiff lacked standing due to improper transfers of the note and mortgage. The trial court further found that defendant did not enter into the consent order due to any fraud or misrepresentation by the plaintiff. And the trial court also held that the information cited by the defendant in support of his allegation that plaintiff had induced them into entering into a predatory loan the appellate division affirmed the denial of defendant's motion. The appellate court agreed with the trial judge that defendants were seeking to litigate claims that they had already waived under a consent order. So, you know, this shows that courts, whenever possible, try to get rid of these cases as easily as possible. So, again, couple more minutes. Let's play a couple more spots and then I'll wrap up.
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heidi and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
Hi, I'm back, Pat Smith. A couple more just brief comments. And one is that litigants should not expect to win on appeal. The vast majority of decisions are, in fact, upheld. One of the concerns always in family law matters is that if any portion of it is reversed, and it seems like that happens a lot, they send it back to the judge and simply tell the judge to make whatever findings that they're asking the judge to make. So it's not a win. It means that it's another go-around at the trial court. And the other thing that people in New Jersey shouldn't realize is that child support in New Jersey does not terminate when a child is 18. Child support terminates when a child is emancipated, and that can be 18. It can be well beyond 18. So the thing that parents who are getting divorced need to do is they really need to have a very comprehensive property settlement agreement. Some people call it a marital settlement agreement. In any event, this vague language can really come back to bite someone. And I'm talking about a case, Berkowitz versus Berkowitz. It was not approved for family, for publication. But in this, what it said, their property agreement stated the parties were each responsible for supporting their children through college based on their respective ability to contribute. So the costs were also to be determined after the children made any individual contributions. That was not sufficient in this case and not sufficient in most cases. So in any event, this kind of we'll go to play the news and we'll be back with the sports guys.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump is visiting the CDC headquarters in Atlanta after visiting tornado-ravaged Tennessee. The CDC is a big part of the United States' efforts to combat the growing coronavirus threat. Meanwhile, Indiana health officials are confirming the state's first presumptive positive case of the coronavirus. Health Commissioner Christine Box made the announcement.
We're here today to announce the first presumptive positive case of COVID-19 in the state of Indiana.
Dr. Box reminds everyone,
the patient and the hospital did everything possible to limit the risk of exposure to other individuals. Because of those steps, the risk of additional exposure and community transmission was decreased.
The up and down week on Wall Street concludes with a down day. The Dow lost 256 points to finish the week at 25,864. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn Root. The healthcare open enrollment period has ended. Did you miss it? Don't go a whole year without having a healthcare program. Sign up now with Liberty HealthShare. As a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, they're not insurance. That means you can sign up at any time of the year. Liberty HealthShare is no network. You're free to pick your own doctors, hospitals, providers, and there are no contracts. Starting as low as $199 per month, Liberty HealthShare has memberships for singles, couples, and families of any size. I joined. I'm a member. My four children are members. Liberty HealthShare saves me $18,000 each year compared to what I was paying for health insurance. Liberty HealthShare is a nonprofit ministry. Your money goes towards helping other members with their eligible medical expenses. And in your time of need, other members are there for you. You can feel good knowing you're part of the community of like-minded individuals who understand the importance of people coming together to bear one another's burdens. For more information, call 855-58-LIBERTY, 855-58-LIBERTY, or go to libertyhealthshare.org/WayneRoot. That's libertyhealthshare.org/WayneRoot.
The U.S. economy is continuing to add jobs as the latest job reports is out for the month of February. With the details, here's USA Radio Network's John Clemens.
The number of new jobs smashed expectations as the jobless rate fell to 3.5%. Eleni Karageorge of the Bureau of Labor Statistics has the latest.
Total non-farm payroll employment rose by 273,000 in February, and the unemployment rate was little changed at 3.5%. Notable job gains occurred in health care and social assistance, food services and drinking places, government, construction, professional and technical services, and financial activities. Both the unemployment rate at 3.5% and the number of unemployed persons at 5.8 million changed little in February.
A new Reuters Ipsos poll shows that former Vice President Joe Biden has a 13 percentage point advantage over Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
President Trump at his first town hall of this campaign season. USA Radio Network's Robin Walensky reports.
I appreciate the question. I think the country is far more united than people think.
President Trump at his first town hall of the 2020 campaign season in Scranton, Pennsylvania, the event hosted by Fox News.
And ultimately, what's uniting the country is success. And we're having more success than we've ever had. We got hit with the virus really 3 weeks ago, if you think about it, I guess. That's when we first started really to see, you know, some possible effects. But even despite that, the country, we are having the greatest year we had last year was the greatest year we've ever had economically. And I think the way we unite is really through success.
It's that time of the year for folks across the country, as we hear from USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes.
Most Americans are set to spring forward this weekend, Sunday marking the beginning of daylight saving time. At 2 a.m. Eastern Time on March 8th, people across the U.S. will need to turn their clocks forward 1 hour to reflect the new time. Or at least you'll have to do that to your old-fashioned clocks, as most other devices just automatically change the time themselves. And for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
For more news, find us online at usaradio.com or check us out on Facebook at USA Radio. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Okay, we're here. It's Bill and Pat, and we're expecting John. And Bill, guess what? It's this afternoon, believe it or not, they said rain was likely. And, of
and they
course
weren't
it was.
Lying, Pat.
No, they weren't. And if it was colder, it would have been snow. And actually, Dave this morning said, gee, it looks like snow, but too warm. Now, however, tonight we can expect rain and snow likely. And then there's another chance of rain or snow. Starts out about 70%. Probably in most areas not going to be snow because it's going to get down to about 33 degrees. So it really could be a mess if it does freeze in some areas, especially on some of the roads. But tomorrow,